Okay, everybody's ready. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So far, we have started with the analysis of the sublime cognitions, as I have pointed out, for the reason because we are following the order how these dhammas are taught in the living tradition. So we started there. We have covered the jhana angas, and we have covered the pancha, the faso panchaka. That mean the five khandhas being the most dominant. Factors determining the cognition. They appear in each and every cognition. We have specially emphasized on that. So we started with faso. We have emphasized that where there is faso, there is an object. There is object is rupa. Then where there is object, there is vedana. Vedana stands for the reception of the object, so it is the first mental dhamma determining the course of cognition. Then where there is a reception of the object, there is taking note of the object or taking the nimitta of the object, the form of the object. And where there is taking form of the object, there has to be the act of willing. There has to be the act of willing, which is the power that enables the mind to go to the object, to penetrate the object. Without these forces, no question of mind cognition arising. Then, when these three aggregates of existence are present, that means vedana, sanya, and chetana, also the phenomena of cognition is present. So we come to the vijnana khanda, which we have already discussed before. So these are the faso panchaka, the five phenomena arising together with faso, with contact. So now we have emphasized that in the Theravada tradition, each and every moment of cognition necessarily has to be connected with seven mental dhammas, seven mental phenomena. If they are not there, so there is no question of any cognition arising. Now, we have covered already among the so-called seven sabbacitta sadharana, the seven mental dhammas common to all cognitions without exception. We have covered so far five. So two are remaining. Which are the five that we have covered? The faso, the contact, the vedana, the reception of the object, sanya, the perception of the object, cetana, the act of volition, and samadhi, the ability of the mind not to disperse. This we have already covered. Now two mental dhammas are remaining, which occur in each and every moment of cognition. The next one is jivita indriya. Jivita indriya means life faculty. This classification of this Dhamma among the mental factors is also a peculiarity, one of the peculiarity of the Theravada system of Abhidhamma. In the other systems of Abhidhamma that we know, we have already mentioned, that is Vaibhashika system and the Yogacara system, we do not know any other system of Abhidhamma. Only we about the other systems of Abhidhamma, we only know from the fragmentary teachings, but not in not completely. And in the other, in the Yogacara system, especially in the Vaibhashika system, this Dhamma, the life faculty, comes under the category of the so-called Chitta Viprayukta Dharmas. What means Chitta Viprayukta Dharmas? This is a peculiarity of all the other Abhidharma system except Theravada. Those dharmas which are crucial for understanding of the mind, mental processes, and of everything that is happening in the world, they are such dharmas like arising, duration, impermanence, or this very life faculty, which neither, strictly speaking, belong to mind nor belong to rupa. They are neither rupa nor mind factors, no factors connected with the mind. But in the Theravadas, so they are, these dharmas in the Sarvastivada tradition or the Yogacara tradition are categorized as citta viprayukta samskaras. The samskaras, the formations which are arisen disconnected with mind. In the Sarvastivada tradition, especially in the Yogacara, we have the whole list of them. I will not go into detail because that would be too complex for you. You can yourself look it up. The differences we have seen between Theravada and the Vaibhashika or Yogacara, among others, is that while, as we have seen, Theravada postulates only four groups of Dhammas, the system postulates five groups of Dhammas. So, beside Chitta, Chetasikas, Rupa, and non-conditioned Dhammas, which in Theravada only is Nirvana, but in the other systems you will have more. I don't go into that now because you would have too much information. Just remember, in Vaibhashika we get three so-called Asamskrita Dharmas. In the Yogacara, even nine. In Theravada, the Asamskrita, the non-compounded, is only Nirvana. And then, in the Vaibhashika system, or in the Yogacara system, as we have pointed out, you get another category. These are these Chitta Viprayukta Samskaras, the formations which are disconnected from mind. And these formations which are disconnected from mind contain many dharmas which are classified in Theravada tradition, usually as rupas, but in the case of Jivita Indriya, also as nama. So Jivita Indriya in the Theravada system belongs to nama, belongs to the Chetasikas. This is a peculiarity of the Theravada system. And what is the Jivita Indriya? What is the life faculty? Life faculty is that which is, as the sutras point out, it is the adhara, it is the base for the phenomena of heat and cognition, which are the, so to say, the necessary conditions of life. Where there is life, there is heat and cognition. Without heat and mind, no life. No organic life. And the base for appearance of heat and mind is then this Jivita Indriya, the faculty of life. The faculty of life in the Yogacara tradition, in the Mahayana sutras, it is compared to the mind is like a horseman, and the Jivita Indriya or prana, Jivita Indriya is a synonym of prana, of chi. This Jivita Indriya is a horse. Without this horse, the horseman of mind cannot go anywhere. So there necessarily has to be this dharma, this element of this phenomena or this element of existence that there appears the nama and rupa. Without this phenomenon of existence, no appearance of nama and rupa. In the Theravada tradition, we distinguish two kinds of jivita indriya. One is nama jivita indriya and one is rupa jivita indriya. The nama jivita indriya is that which makes things organic in the sense that they have life, cognition. They make them the living sentient organism. So the definition of Buddhism is what is a sentient being? The sentient being is the one who has jivita indriya. So the killing, strictly speaking, the killing of sentient beings then is defined as cutting the life faculty. So the non-sentient beings like plants, suppose we cut the plants, as far as Buddhism is concerned, there is no harm in cutting the plants because a plant has no nama jivita indriya. It has only rupa jivita indriya. So, for example, there is a rule in the Vinaya that the monk is, and the nun as well, is not allowed to cut the plants. Strictly speaking, this is only conventional. From the Buddhist point of view, there is absolutely no harm in cutting the plant because the plants, they have no nama jivita indriya, they have only rupa jivita indriya. So there is no in cutting the plant, there is no question of being any sinful action. But yet it is not allowed because some Brahmins in the time of Buddha, they considered plants to be eka jivita indriya, to be the living organism with one indriya, jivita indriya. So complying to this convention, the Buddha also made this rule, but strictly speaking, the taking life is only taking the nama jivita indriya. Rupa jivita indriya is not concerned. And what does this jivita indriya do? What is its characteristic? The characteristics of the life faculty is protecting the phenomena which arise together with it. It is compared in the Abhidhamma just like water. Water to the lotus or the nurse to a child. The jivita indriya is to the other mental phenomena. Without jivita indriya, the other mental phenomena will just perish like lotus without water, or the child without a nursing mother or nursing nurse taking care of it. So wherever there is action of mind, this action of mind is considered to be the manifestation of the life faculty. Without life faculty, just like the horseman cannot move without the horse, so the mind cannot function without the life faculty. We know, for example, that those who have read the, for example, Mahaparinibbana Sutta and so on, that Buddha has given up his life faculty in Vaisali, and then he still, after giving up his life faculty, he still lives 3 months till he comes to Kusinagar. Kusinagara, there he enters into Nirvana. So it is for exceptional beings like the Buddha who have exceptional powers, it is possible to maintain life by power of determination even, but normally once the life faculty is cut, in this case it is not cut, it is just given up. But when the life faculty stops functioning, the other mental dhammas necessarily stop functioning as well. So the manifestation of the life faculty or of prana is that these mental faculties are established. When they are established, it means that there is the life faculty functioning. When the mental faculties are, mental dhammas are not established, then the life faculty is not functioning. And we have to emphasize that the same characteristics that refer to the nama, jivita, indriya, also, as we will see in later when we come to rupa, also function in regard to rupa. The rupa, jivita, indriya is also that which keeps the rupa, dhammas, going on. So, as that means that as soon as there is a santana, as there is continuity of nama and rupa, there necessarily has to be this jivita indriya, the life faculty. And the life faculty is, so to say, the primary cause of the continuity of nama and, as I have emphasized, even rupa. But in case of rupa, we have the rupa life faculty. So this is another, we have the six mental dhamma, six mental phenomena which appears in each and every moment of cognition. And we come to the seventh very, very important mental phenomena, without which nothing can happen, without which no cognition can appear. And that is manasikara. Manasikara is normally translated into English as attention. But it is much more than just attention. For the lack of better translation, we leave it as attention. But literally, manasikara, manasi means a locative of manas, in the manas, in the mind. And kara means making. So the manasikara is the mental dhamma which makes things appear in the mind, which put things in the mind. So it is a very important dhamma. In all system of Abhidhamma, it must exist necessarily in each and every moment of cognition, that the cognition takes place. Without it, no question of cognition taking place. Unless we make things in the mind, how can there be cognition? And especially in the Theravada system, this Dhamma is of crucial importance for understanding of the whole Theravada system. Without understanding Manasikara, there is no way of understanding the Chittavittis, the processes of cognition. Which appear exactly only because we make things in the mind. When we don't make things in the mind, nothing will appear. We have pointed out that in the Vaibhashika system, for example, we have the Dasha Mahabhumika Dharma, the 10 dharmas corresponding to the Sabbacitta Sadharana, to the mental dharmas common to all cognition. And among them, beside those mentioned in Theravada, we have Adimukti, we have Chanda, we have Smriti, we have Mati. All these dharmas, why they classified like that is connected with their system of seeing, this system of meditation. Now, why Theravada analyze these chittavittis in such a detail, and all the teaching of the interdependent origination in Theravada is based on this detailed analysis of the mental processes. Without them, no question of understanding the teachings of 24 pachayas in the patana and so on. The whole Theravada system of Abhidhamma is based on this understanding of the mental processes. This is also the main, so the backbone of understanding of the Visuddhimagga presentation of in the Panya section, in the wisdom section of the Vipassana, mental processes. All is based on the special analysis of the Manasikara. And in order to understand this Theravada, then Theravada Abhidhamma, we have to understand the mental processes. And it is good time now to talk about them in regards to our analysis of the Manasikara of this Dhamma, which is the key to understanding of the mental processes. So we have mentioned yesterday, I think, the concept of bhavanga, which is crucial for understanding of Theravada Abhidhamma, meaning bhavanga, meaning the course of mind, which is the cause of existence, the support of existence, or the support of active cognitive processes. Without this mind, no active cognitive process can take place. And we have pointed out that according to the Theravada system, when the mind is not confronted with an object, it is in the state of contemplating the bhavanga object, which is the object of the last cognitive process of our past life. And as long as we will be in samsara, our next life will depend on our last cognitive process in this life. Then our next bhavanga, next continuity, next cause of existence will be that cognitive process. So it is very important to understand. Now, we have pointed out the similarity between the bhavanga mind cognition and the sublime cognition. Both the sublime cognition and the bhavanga cognition, they are the cognitions which occur in regard, which occur continuously without interruption for a long time in regard to the same object. So while we have pointed out the kama vachara citta, the mind which is the mind which is kama vachara citta, which is mind dominated by perception of the five senses, connected with the five senses, is a weak mind. Why it is weak mind? Because it's the object. Objects of cognition in, we will step by step analyze these different objects, but the objects of cognition in the sphere of cognition dominated by sensual perception is unstable. Therefore, mind in this sphere of cognition, in this sphere of the world, is also very unstable, not strong. The mind in the sublime cognition is a strong mind because it stays for a long time with the same object, does not change the object. So we have specially emphasized the difference between the kama-vachara cognition and the sublime cognition is that in the kama-vachara cognition the object does not stay long. In the sublime cognition, the object stays very long. For expert meditators, hours, even days altogether, we can stay with the same object. According to Abhidhamma, the up to 7 days one can stay in this state of cognition. However, there are some meditators who can stay even longer. In China, there was a very famous monk, Xu Yun Dashi, who could stay even 2 months, 3 months in the state of absorption. There are such cases. Strictly speaking, according to Abhidhamma, it's allowed 7 days, but it can be more. In Taiwan, there was one Quan Qing Zhang Lao, old monk. He could also stay much longer than 1 week in this absorption. How did they do it? You have to investigate yourself. But what is important for us is to understand the difference between the sublime mind and the kama-vachara mind, unstable mind. Once you have become the masters of this sublime mind and you have especially practiced the so-called iti padas, the basis of mastery, then you can practice so-called abhinya citta, supernatural minds. In these supernatural minds, even so you stay in this sublime mind. According to the Theravada system, only the fifth jhana is used for the abhinyas, but in the Mahayana we find Yogacara system, they allow also other jhanas for the abhinyas. Normally, the abhinyas are the fifth jhana, and abhinyas are the mind. We will discuss this mind later if we have enough time. When you're using supernatural mind, due to the supreme mastery of the absorptions and due to doing certain kind of exercises which are also explained in the Visuddhimagga, jumping from one meditation object to another meditation object and jumping from one level of due to stronger will. Will belongs to the Iddhipadas also, to the basis of mastery. You jump from different subject, different levels of absorption. Then the mind becomes so pliable that you can use even this sublime mind towards changing objects. But normally when we speak of sublime mind, what is meant by sublime mind is the mind which does not change object. The exceptions, see, we will discuss them later if we have time, being these supernatural minds. Now this supernatural mind, the sublime minds, all are also kind of a special cognition. We have sublime cognition. So they are also special mind processes, connected with special mind processes. The other special mind processes discussed in the Abhidhamma is the mind processes of the realization. When one attains the Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami and Arahat stage, these are also special cognitions comparable to the sublime conditions which we have been discussing so far. And in order to understand these cognitions, to understand the normal sensual object bound cognition, to understand the sublime cognition, to understand the supernatural mind cognitions, to understand the superworldly cognition, the key to this understanding is understanding of the manasikara. So, an understanding of the manasikara, we then connect with understanding of the mental processes. Everything, all cognitions that happen, with other mind than the mind of Bhavanga, the base mind. All these cognitions are called technically in the Theravada tradition, citta vitti. Hmm? Citta means mind or cognition. Viti means literally, viti means street or path. So the active mind can only appear in the path of cognitions. And the key to understanding cognition is in the Theravada system is understanding of this path of cognitions. And the key to understanding the path of cognitions, which is the backbone of the whole Theravada Abhidhamma, is understanding of the Manasikara. So you should be specially careful about make sure that you understand this Manasikara well. So in the Theravada system of Abhidhamma we have three kinds of Manasikara. To start with, we have the Sabbacitta Sadharana Manasikara, the common Manasikara, which occurs, as we have pointed out, in each and every moment of cognition. There is no question of any moment of cognition, even the Bhavanga cognition, without Manasikara, without making in the mind. When we don't make object in the mind, there is no question of cognition, of course. Beside, well, let us first describe this common Manasikara which appears in each and every moment of cognition so that we can understand it. What is the characteristic of Manasikara, of attention, of making object in the mind? According to Abhidhamma, the characteristic of Manasikara is sarana. Sarana means driving the associated states. That means all the other mental factors appearing in the same mind, driving them towards the object. In the Abhidhamma commentaries, the Manasikara, this act of driving mind and mental factors to the object, is compared with the rudder of the boat of mind. Without this force, the mind has no direction. You should always keep in mind that these sankharas, these mental factors, they are forces which determine the nature of cognition. Cognition itself is nothing else but the assembly of forces. So we have pointed out that the force that pulls mind towards the object is the act of will, the cetana, plus the vitaka, applied thought. These are like two oars which push the boat of cognition towards the object. Then what is Manasikara? Manasikara is the rudder of the boat which gives it direction. Without direction, the boat cannot move. In order for the boat of cognition to move, you have to have a direction and you have to have the propelling power. These two, when they are not present, then the cognition cannot take place. So the rudder which gives direction to the mind is nothing else than this very Dhamma of Manasikara. Without Manasikara, the cognition has no direction, and when cognition has no direction, it cannot occur. So how do we know that this power of driving mind with its mental factors to the object is there? We know it by the fact that the mind and its mental factors get connected to the object. When the mind and mental factors are connected to the object, this is the function, this is the taste of Manasikara. Without it, the mind and mental factors will not connect with the object. And what is the manifestation of this force of mind to drive mind and mental factors to the object? The manifestation is that we are facing the object. When we are facing the object, it means the Manasikara is there. And what is the primary cause for appearance of this Dhamma? Of course, the object itself. When the object appears to our mind, necessarily there has to be this Dhamma of Manasikara, of making in the mind. Because if that Dhamma is not there, our mind has no direction, it will not take any object. So now let us come, we have started with the three kinds of Manasikara, let us come to the other two kinds of Manasikara, which are, strictly speaking, not Manasikara, not making in the mind. They are the types of cognition itself, which is dominated by Manasikara. And this moment of cognition, which as we will see later, is the automatic moment of cognition, that means it appears automatically. When there is impact of the object on the Bhavanga mind, the Bhavanga mind will then be interrupted and the mind turns towards the object. when the mind turns towards the object, it is due to this special function of the manasikara, of the making in mind, of the object of active perception. So, that is to say, just like you throw a stone to a pond, the stone, when it lands on the pond, it will first it will make waves, then it sinks to the bottom. Similarly, when the object makes impact on the bhavanga, it will vibrate first, and then it will be cut. And what appears then is the active process of cognition. And this active process of cognition starts with this, with a mind which is dominated by manasikara. It is an automatic mind of turning towards the object. And we have two types then of this mind which is dominated by manasikara. One is called pancha dvara vajana. Pancha means five, dvara means door, which is the door, which are the five doors, starting with eye, then ears, then nose, then tongue, then body. These are the five senses beside the mind. Then turning towards the object after bhavanga has been broken, then automatic turning towards the object of this, either of eye cognition or ear cognition, nose cognition, tongue cognition or body cognition. This is called panchadvara avajana. Avajana means turning towards. So this is one type of special mind, manasikara mind. It has other mental factors beside manasikara. It has the seven mental factors necessarily present in all kinds of cognition. It has also applied thought. It has also sustained thought. But the manasikara is the main function of that mind. And another one is manodvara avajana. That means, mano means mind, dvara means door. They are six doors of perception. Very important to understand. Which are the six doors of perception? The eye door, the ear door, nose door, tongue door, body door, and finally Bhavanga door, the door of mental perception, just like I is the door of the I cognition, the Bhavanga is the door of mental cognition. So manodvara avajana means turning towards the object of appearing at the mental door of perception. Now the difference between the panchadvara avajana and manodvara avajana is that the object of the manodvara avajana, of the mental cognition arising from Bhavanga itself, the object of mental cognition is the object which arises directly from the Bhavanga itself. So it arises from inside. From the mind itself. The object of the five door cognition does not arise, strictly speaking, from inside. It arises from outside. There has to be color to be seen. There has to be sound to be heard. There has to be taste to be tasted. There has to be smell to be smelled. There has to be tangible to be touched in order for the five door perception to arise. And if this is the case, then before the actual active process of cognition, which is called in Pali, is called javana, which means literally running through the object. Before active running through the object, before the actual experience of the object appears, in the five door perception, there has to be a preliminaries to direct to running through the object. That means when the stone is thrown on the level of the water, of the pond, what happens? First, as we have seen, the Bhavanga, the basic mind, the mind cause of existence, or the root mind, is its cognition is vibrated, then interrupted, then automatically happens so-called automatic mind. We have already mentioned in the very beginning of our Abhidhamma lesson that the one mind, one cognition in the peculiarity of the Theravada Abhidhamma is that one cognition is divided into 89 or even 100 21 is kinds of cognition. According to the level of cognition, bhumi, then according to jati, according to the nature of cognition. In the bhumi, we have pointed out that we have four levels of cognition: kamavachara, rupavachara, arupavachara, and lokutara. Cognition dominated by sensual perception, cognition dominated by cognition of the subtle forms, cognition dominated by formless objects, and supermundane cognition. Then according to jati, according to the nature of cognition, we have also four divisions. We have kusala cognition, wholesome cognition, we have akusala cognition, unwholesome cognition, we have vipaka cognition, cognition which is resultant of the previous kamma, ripening of the previous kamma, and the kriya cognition, cognition which is automatic, which is neither wholesome nor unwholesome nor result of the previous kamma, but happens automatically. So this turning towards the object of the five senses, or turning towards the mental object when bhavanga has been disturbed and interrupted, is an automatic mind. That means it is a mind which is not of the nature of wholesome and unwholesome cognition, and it is also not of the nature of the result of previous kamma. So, after, now we're talking about the five doors cognition. When the bhavanga has been interrupted, automatically the mind will turn towards the object. The next moment in the five door cognition is that the same object to which the mind has turned will be reflected, if it is a visual cognition it will be reflected in the sensitivity of the eye, if it is ear cognition, it will be reflected in the sensitivity of the ear. If it is nose cognition, it will be reflected in the sensitivity of the nose. If it is tongue cognition, it will be reflected in the sensitivity of the tongue. And if it is bodily cognition, it will be reflected in the sensitivity of the body. when we come to Rupa later, you will learn that according to the Buddhist Abhidhamma, when we see the object, we say that we see the object with the eye, but it is actually only the conventional name. The real eye is only the sensitivity of the eye, which is only one of the 54 different rupas which we find in the eye. You will learn them slowly later. And according to our wise disciple Sariputta, this sensitivity of the eye is smaller than the head of the louse. You have seen a louse in Germany. Louse not very common, but in those who have lived in Burma or in India, very familiar with a louse. In Pauk, very common louse. In India, especially in the religious places, louses are always companions. If you want to feel well, you have to make them good companions, which is very difficult. The head of the louse, very small, very without a magnifying glass, you will not be able to see it. So this sensitivity of the, actually the part of the eye that sees the object, in which the object is reflected, is not the whole eye, but it is a very, very small part of the eye. That eye, that sensitivity of the eye is only part of the eye which is sensitive to color. All the other parts of the eye are not sensitive to color. When you have learned meditation, the Abhidhamma style meditation, you will find it out by yourself. In the meantime, you have just to believe me that it is so. So this sensitivity of the eye is concentrated only in the eye. Sensitivity of the ear is concentrated only in the ear, and of the nose is only in the nose, of the tongue is only on the tongue. The sensitivity of the body is spread all over the body. No place in the body where the sensitivity of the body is not spread. So when the bhavanga has been interrupted and when it happens after the automatic mind of turning towards the object has happened, then automatically the object will be reflected in the sensitivity of the eye. This is called then chakhu vijnana. Chakhu vijnana is the most rudimentary mind that exists. It is mere reflect. The eye cognition is mere reflection of the object in the sensitivity of the eye. The sensitivity of the eye is the eye door and the eye base also. And it is the most rudimentary mind which only has these seven sabbacitta sadharana. It does not have any other mental dhammas, mental factors. And this mind is the vipaka citta. It is a resultant consciousness, resultant cognition. It means it happens as a result of our previous cognitions, as a ripening of our previous cognitions. If the object appearing to the eye is a pleasant object, it is the result of a wholesome cognition in the past. If it is unpleasant object, it is a result of the unwholesome cognition in the past. So you should be aware of that. The more you enjoy, the more wholesome karma you have done. Now the problem, of course, is that what appears pleasant to one does appear may appear very unpleasant to another one. This is a very intriguing question. So it is a question very difficult to solve. The more mastery of mind we have, the more the less we are, our mind is dominated by the object. The more, the wiser one becomes, the more master of the cognition one will become. The more experienced the mind, the less slave of the object of cognition it becomes. Till the arahats and the buddhas who are complete, of course, masters of the cognition. They can, in regard to unpleasant object, they can give rise to pleasant mind or to neither, to neutral mind, as they wish. So how to solve this dilemma? What is pleasant, what is unpleasant object? The pleasant object and unpleasant object is according to the average person, not in accordance with the enlightened people, but in accordance with the perception of the average person. This is also very intriguing, but it is in a way better solution than no solution at all. So when you see a good color, this is a result of your previous good karma. If you see a bad color, this is a result of your previous bad karma. But don't worry, we have all done milliards and billions of karmas, so you can never know. So after this object, pleasant or unpleasant object, is reflected in the sensitivity of the eye, just like in mirror, it is a most rudimentary kinds of cognition, as we have said, only characterized by the 7 factors of cognition present in each and every moment of cognition. After the object has been reflected, it is received. This is the so-called sampatichana citta. It is also very, very rudimentary cognition. But nevertheless, it has beside the 7 mental factors mentioned, it still has also applied thought and sustained thought. When the object has been received, the next happens, it will be investigated. This is called santirana citta. Both this receiving mind and the investigating mind, they are also, just like the eye consciousness, they are also the resultant minds. That means if you receive a pleasant object, it means it is a result of your previous good karma. If you receive unpleasant object, it is a result of your previous unwholesome karma. Again, if you investigate a pleasant object, it is a result of your previous pleasant karma. If you receive unpleasant object, it is a result of your previous unwholesome karma. Then, once the object has been investigated, there happens the automatic mind, which corresponds to the manodvara vajana, turning towards the object which appears at the bhavanga. This mind is called votapana. Votapana means decision. So in the five door cognition, this votapana mind is of decisive importance. In the manodvara vajana cognition, in the manodvara cognition, in the mental cognition, the manodvara vajana is the decisive mind in the cognition. Why? Because the what follows is the active process of after deciding about the five door object, or after turning toward the mental object, what follows is the active process of cognition, which is either wholesome or unwholesome. In case of non-enlightened people, if you become an arahat or if you become a Buddha, then this active process of cognition is neither wholesome nor unwholesome, but it is automatic, without question of ripening into wholesome or unwholesome, because Buddha or Arahat, bye-bye samsara, no more maturing in future lives. But still, in this life, when they see a pleasant object, it is still the maturing of the wholesome in the past. If they see unpleasant object, it is still maturing of the unwholesome in the past, but in the future, bye bye. Also the kiriya cognition. Kiriya cognition. No question of wholesome or unwholesome, only kiriya. That is why no more. But what kind of object? Yeah.
At that time, what kind of piti arise in there?
Piti.
Piti, my process.
Kriya.
Kriya.
Kriya. The javana is only kriya javana. Even no question, of course. Yes, that is vipaka. Wholesome and unwholesome comes only in vipaka. In the javana comes only the kriya. In the javana, no question of wholesome or unwholesome. We will see later how this cognition. Now, just remember what I'm saying. Slowly, slowly, you get more and more. That is why you have to look in your book to understand this. So, why is it so important? This Votapana mind and this Manodvara, Avajana mind, why is it so important? Because if the Manasikara, if the attention in that mind is Yoniso Manasikara, then appears the wholesome process of cognition. If it is Ayoniso Manasikara, then appears unwholesome process of cognition. Now, we are talking in terms, we have said that Abhidhamma is a special Dhamma of the enlightened people, not of the unenlightened people. So, what is the Yoniso Manasikara? Strictly speaking, the Yoniso Manasikara means nothing else but Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta. And Ayoniso Manasikara is Nicca, Sukha, and Atta. And how it goes further, we will learn tomorrow, and we will repeat again this process of cognition. So please kindly check up in your book, and tomorrow I will complete it and give you some examples so that you understand. Example of the, usually illustrated by example of the mango eater or example of a spider, to understand this process. And we will see what kinds of cognitions are there, what kinds of objects, and what is the relation between the object and the cognition. So that much for today. As you get more and more information, you will have to make some effort to check it in your book and get order. We have purposely not followed slavishly the book. We have started with the sublime cognition, and we will go to the other types of cognition only after we have analyzed the sublime cognition. So I will also talk about the special sublime cognition, but it can be only understood when we have understood these general rules of cognition. So make sure, if you want to really understand what this monk is talking about, unless you have already been studying Abhidhamma for quite some time, you may get confused by all these terms. So you check in your book, especially because we are not slavishly following the book, we are interpreting more freely. It is a Herausforderung, the challenge for you to use more intelligent approach and to always to find out in the book the parts concerned with my exposition on that day. I am not going into the details. If I go, there are different opinions of the different commentators, of the Lady Sayada, of the Vibhavini Tika. If I start discussing that, you will get a headache, and I myself. So we make it simple, but even simple is not so simple. So please try to absorb always on each and every day the consulting the book, what we have learned on that day. And slowly, slowly, you will get a more complete picture, but it will only come when you, with your own effort. Okay. Oh, that's always falling. Yeah. Akasatta chabumartha deva naga mahidika punyang tang anumoditva chiram rakantu loka sasanang. Akasatta chabumartha deva naga mahidika punyang tang anumoditva chiram rakantu desanang. Akasatta chabumartha deva naga mahidika punyang tang anumoditva chiram rakantu tumamparang. So have a nice day, have a nice lunch, and we continue tomorrow.